Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Final hour of Grant and Danny. Albert Breer of SI and MMQB at 1:30 on the release of Josh Norman and Paul Richardson by the Redskins. We'll also get you prepared for XFL Week 2. I'm hearing good things about the ticket sold number already for the Defenders this weekend, which is a very good sign. They're hoping potentially to get a second straight sellout, which would be amazing to kick off the XFL season. And there are some rumors about the NFL quarterback carousel, including Matt Stafford. We'll get to all that in this, our final hour of the show, plus a weekend preview of the NBA All-Star festivities and the Caps as Ovi hunts for 700. But we have stumbled into a debate here. It's raging nationally. This is an age-old discussion that you and I have bantied about on the show from time to time. Is it okay to recline your seat on an airplane? I guess, let's play a little, is it weird? Because I am of the belief, is it weird? I think that if you recline your seat on an airplane, you are selfish. Is that weird, I guess, is the question. Is it weird, Danny, that I feel like if you recline your seat, someone's sitting behind you, you're being selfish?
It's not weird at all. It's correct. It's empirically correct. And the justifications are, it's fine that I'm selfish because I paid. Again, would you do this? You ever sat next to someone in an airplane? Let's say you're sitting in the middle seat and I'm on the aisle. Well, sometimes what I like to do is stretch my left arm out because you're on my left. I stretch my left arm out into the space in front of your face and I wave it around because I'm stretching. Would you ever invade someone's space that way? Horizontally, right? No, of course you wouldn't do that unless you're a psychopath, in which case you shouldn't be flying. You should be jailed. But people are fine doing that in front to back, the north-south version. You're fine invading my space. I have such limited, tiny space because the airlines are jerks. They're the real villains. It doesn't mean you're not a villain too. The airlines are Thanos, you're Baron Zemo.
How about a stadium? You know, you go to a Nats game or a Wizards or Caps game at the arena, or maybe even you're one of the few, the proud, the brave, who goes to FedEx Field. And I sit sometimes at stadiums, I'll cross my legs, let's say, right? So I sit here, I've got my left leg kind of 90-degree angle, bent at the knee, I've got my right leg propped up on it with my shoe on my thigh, and you know it's making like that 90-degree L shape. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
If my shoe is like right up on and grazing the back of the person in front of me, I'm not going to keep my foot like that. I paid for this seat. I might have paid a ton of money, but I'm not going to touch the back of the person in front of me with my shoe or have it a half inch away so that every time they lean back a little bit or stretch or every time they do anything other than sit forward, their back touches my shoe. It's just common decency.
Well, here's what I do. I take my peanut shells. When I'm done with them, I just put them over my right shoulder. Just impose on the person behind me. You would never do that. And you somehow are fine doing that in space. You paid for the seat. It doesn't mean you get to be selfish.
And everyone thinks they have this trump card because they say, well, if we weren't supposed to be able to recline our seats, then it shouldn't be a function. The reason that the function is a possibility is in the event that you can do it because no one's behind you. We've all had flights like that. If it's so important to you to recline your seat, get an exit row or get a row where you're in a position where nobody's going to be around you. And I would say the same thing, by the way. If you're going to be the guy who's so moved to emotion and angry by someone reclining their seat that you're going to punch the back of their seat or spend an hour just annoying them by tapping the back of their head or whatever, you're going to be abrasive and actually you're going to try to make this a fight, then you should, if you care that much, you too, if you're 6'5", as an example, do what you need to do to purchase a seat where you have extra leg room. But the bad guy, other than the airline here, who gives you no space, is way more the person reclining their seat than just the person sitting there who doesn't want you reclining in their lap. Let's go to Alex and Bowie on Grant and Danny. Which side of the aisle are you on?
Guys, I think that you two have an amazing show. You really have your finger on the pulse of the people most of the time.
There's a button coming.
You're so incorrect. You're just so incorrect. And let me tell you why. One is the button thing. But yeah, you took that point away. It's a decent argument. Humans are selfish, and you put that button there, we're going to use it. But let me ask you this. What are you doing with that 10 degrees of space in front of you that I'm reclining into? And a follow-up, if you also would just recline your seat that 10 degrees of space,
yes,
we are left with equal amounts of space.
Why is it your call, sir? Why is it your call to make sure that I impose on the party behind me? Because you're selfish, I now am required to be to have the same amount of comfort as
well,
you.
Well, if you
and
just
hold on,
smoked
hold on,
a cigarette
wait a second.
Too, then you wouldn't be as annoyed by the smoke smell.
It's not your concern what the guy behind you is doing or not doing. It's not your call to make. You don't have to dictate that they have less space. You just decided that they've got to deal with it because you need that. Again, you're defending selfish behavior. Now, if you embrace that and say, yes, I'm defending selfish behavior, I feel entitled to it, I'll be selfish, we can have a conversation. Any type of justification that it's not self-centered, I'm more special than the other passengers.
What are you doing with those 10
nonsense.
Degrees? Whatever I want to do
None
with those 10
God
degrees.
None of your bleeping business.
And by the way, maybe it's just where my knees are. Now, I happen to be 5'8 and change. So I'm not one of these 6'3, 6'4 dudes flying commercial.
Yeah, I'm not Jason Bishop squeezing
but
into
those
a tin
people,
can.
They're using those degrees because their knees are literally there. That's where their legs go. For the rest of us, maybe I use it when I lean forward to get something out of my bag. Maybe I'm using it for the book that's on my lap.
Maybe I've got a laptop, and maybe now I can't see the screen anymore because you've tilted it at a weird angle that no human being could experience. Again, it's none of your damn business what I'm doing.
Well, if I just listen to my stuff really loudly, all you have to do is put in earbuds, and then it's fine. You're right. Then it's fine. But until I do something to correct for what you've done, it's not that fine. Let's go to James in Stafford on G&D. What's up, James?
Hi, James.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Well, first off, just before I get into it, the guy doing it, what he's doing to a woman, if she would have grabbed a carry-on and swung it to hit him in the face door style, I wouldn't have blamed the one did. That was just a jerk thing to do.
That was ridiculous.
He was being a jerk.
That guy
question.
Stunk.
Yeah, that's the, you know, come on. There's better ways to handle stuff like that. But what my point would be is that I was given a piece of advice one time that was very golden, and I pretty much live by it. You can only control that which you can control. You can't get mad about other things you can't because it's without your reach. You can't do anything about it. So being in that seat, I was on a Frontier Airlines flight one time, and the lady, we were about to, come into the flight, and the stewardess was like, okay, everybody recline your seats back to proper position, blah, blah. And I'm in a seat, and I'm like, how the hell are we supposed to do that? Because I'm looking at the person next to me. We can't recline. But I'm noticing that the seats towards the front can recline. And pretty much what that told me was, if I would have paid for a first-class ticket or for a better seat, I wouldn't have to worry about the fact that, one, I can't recline, and that, two, the people that would have been in front of me that had that type of seat could do that.
Yeah, because there's more space, so you could pay a little more and have that issue. I mean, this could all be solved by just turning around and saying, hey, would you mind if I recline? Now, I wouldn't do that anyway because I'm not going to put someone in an awkward position of saying yes or no. But how many people actually do that? I've never once been asked by the person in front of me, hey, do you mind if I recline my seat? They just do it.
They just do it. Now, here's what I do. Here's what I don't do. I don't do the use it as a speed bag like this guy did. He tried to like bother her of the entire
flight.
He That's
was
too
a
much.
Jerk.
I tweet about it like an adult. But the thing I do, if you just impose your selfishness on me, when I get up to go to the bathroom, you'll feel that.
Oh, definitely.
There'll be an incident. Now, you may not care. Maybe worth the price to you, but just know that I know.
Right.
So when I got to stand up in a weird way, I'll push that thing down, push it back up. I'm not going to be gentle either because you're the douche.
Let's go to Wendell in Springfield. What's up, Wendell?
Mr. Wendell.
Hey, guys. You guys opened, like, Pandora's box on this because I think seating in general requires a certain amount of etiquette. It's not weird. No matter where you're sitting, if you're on a road trip, you're not going to put your car seat all the way back on some guy's knees or whatever the case may be. So it's just – it's a privilege to recline. Put it that way. It's not a right.
Thank you.
I think that that's well said. Steve in Gainesville, it seems like you're on our side here about basically just the decorum of the idea that reclining inherently is disrespectful to the person behind you.
100%. Now, let me tell you a real quick story. I was on an airplane, and context, I'm about 6'4", so I'm a tall guy. I was on an airplane and not reclining my seat like a decent human being, and a lady behind me who was very small, she actually tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, You can recline your seat if you'd like to. And you know what I said?
Thank you.
I said, no, that is okay. I'm fine. And you know what that is? Common decency. It's all about common decency.
But in that situation, I think you're well within your rights to say, oh, thank you very much, and recline. Because, again, if it's not going to bother someone, if they don't care, then that's the whole point.
We're all in this together. When you do it, when you do your thing, you're in it for you together. And you may not care. The point is, we're all struggling with the same crap.
If you think that the argument, it's my seat, I bought it, I can do what I want with my seat and my money, basically, works, then rebut my point that you're not going to be able to just listen to your music loudly at your own seat because it annoys everyone around you. How is that any different than this? Rich is in Los Angeles. Hey, Rich.
Hi, Rich.
Hey, guys. I love you guys. This is a subject that my friends and I talk about all the time. I fly about 100,000 miles a year. I commute between L.A., D.C., and London.
Oh, wow.
And I'm 6 foot six. I'll put it in perspective for you. And I do get the extended leg room seats. I never put my seat back for common courtesy for the person behind me. I've had people shove their seats back the second wheels are up. They don't say a word. It busts my knees. And it kind of gets to me a little bit. So I agree with you, and I agree with the previous callers, that it's common decency. If you're going to slam your seat back, if you're going to move it back, talk to the person behind you. And I've even said to some taller guys than me there in front of me, hey, if you want to lean your seat back, go right ahead.
Appreciate the phone call. People want to hop in so we can take a few more calls on this next at 800-636-1067. Maybe read some of the best responses on Twitter as well. It is Valentine's Day, so before we get out of here, I don't know what we should discuss.
We need to bring people back together. This is divisive.
How important love is on this day for Grant and Danny as a radio family. I think we could do that. Also, got a couple thoughts for you next on the NBA All-Star festivities that are kicking off this weekend. We could tackle all that on Grant and Danny. A divisive last few minutes. We're getting to the bottom of whether or not is it acceptable to recline your seat on an airplane. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. Quickly, before we get back to the calls, the NBA All-Star festivities have begun. They will ensue from tonight through the end of the weekend. Here's what we're looking at right now, Danny, in the Eastern Conference. You ready for this? The Milwaukee Bucks are 46-8. They're the one seed. Behind them, the Raptors, the Celtics, and then a pretty big drop-off to the rest of the pack led by the Heat. Other than the Bucks, you have to put money on another team to come out of the East. Do you go with the Raptors, who have 40 wins, or the Celtics, who seem to be getting right?
Celtics, man. Their ceiling's higher. I really believe that. Toronto, they're good, obviously, and they got a great program. They know what they're doing. But I think Boston has the second highest ceiling in the Eastern Conference.
In the East, Giannis, your leader with 30 points per game. Trae Young, second, 29.7. Brad Beal of the Wizards, third, 29.1 at the break. Your leading rebounder, Andre Drummond of the Cavs, averages 16 boards a game. And Trae Young, by the way, with those 29.7 points, 9.2 assists. Trae Young is awesome. I'd imagine he's terrible defensively based on his body. I'm not really sure. But he is sterling on the other end of the floor.
It is. It's a lot of wild stuff, is what I would say. It's like Johnny Carson talking about. In other words, it's like he takes two dribbles across half court, steps back, shoots a three.
What are the defensive metrics on him? Am I right?
I don't have them in front of me, but they're not. I mean, Atlanta's rotten. They're terrible. But I bet you he's awful on defense.
Dar's saying he's the worst defensive point guard in the league.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Would mesh with what I imagine and why partially that team is so bad defensively.
He's there to take crazy shots.
Out west, your quick snapshot at the break. You got the Lakers at 41-12. You get LeBron. You go get the brow.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be better. The Nuggets, I don't know if I would call it quietly, but they have had an awesome first half of the season.
They're really good again.
The team that everybody jocks and seems to think is going to give the Lakers a push is the Clippers, who are third right now in the West. And then you got some fun teams back into the top eight, like the Grizzlies, who are a couple games over 500, trying to make the playoffs with Ja Morant. In the West, who do you like better, Lakers, Denver, or the Clip Show?
Clips, man. They went and got Marcus Morris, which will help them. They are on cruise control. They have such a veteran team. It's Kawhi Leonard. It's Paul George. They're taking it easy on those guys. A lot of load management. They know what they have. They're going to try to ramp up, come close to playoff time. But to me, they are, I don't want to say the favorite because the Lakers are no joke. Obviously, when you've got the Brow and LeBron, you know, running high pick and roll, it's tough to deal with. But to me, I think the Clippers are the best team.
The Warriors, by the way, have the worst record in basketball.
Crazy.
Obviously, the Curry injury, losing Kevin Durant to Brooklyn and not having Klay Thompson, but they're 12-43. So you got the worst team in the East, the Cavs, who were in the finals every year when LeBron was there, and the worst team in the West is the Warriors, the teams that met every year in the championship, which is kind of wacky. James Harden averaging 35.3 points per game, leading the West. Rudy Gobert of Utah, 15 boards a night, your top rebounder. And your leading assist man out West? Care to take a guess?
Leading assist man in the West. God, this is hard. Russell Westbrook.
This just shows how much the league has changed. Number one, LeBron James, 10.8.
Okay.
Number two, Luka Doncic, 8.7.
Wow.
A little bit of a telling
good nugget
look. The dunk contest going to be this weekend. One of those things, man. We act like we care. We love it. We get excited. And then everyone's just going to bash it the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
It's where all the cynicism and the shtick on Twitter comes to, like, have a party. Dunk contest night. These guys are doing these amazing things that nobody watching can do, and we just bash it and say that it's not interesting. It is what it is. It's the same thing it's been for 30 years. We've just changed. The dunk contest hasn't changed. We've changed. We're more cynical. We've seen cool things, and they're not as cool anymore, so now we just complain a lot.
We've seen so many cool things. We've seen amazing things. And the thing that people always lament, and I think this is correct, is it used to be the stars would do it, right? You're just never going to get this again. You're never going to get Jordan and Dominique at the height of their powers going back and forth. That just, it's over now. You could still get great battles. You could still have a lot of fun. You could still see something you haven't seen before. Again, I always bring this up to you. The Aaron Gordon chair dunk is one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life.
So good.
It's unbelievable.
I still remember Gerald Green blowing out the cupcake on the rim.
The birthday dunk. Yeah.
Just the creative prop usage. One of my favorite ever. So hopefully we get a nice little show. I'm a big three-point contest guy as well. All right, let's try to mow through as many of these calls as we can. So we're talking about looking out for your neighbors. Be succinct and make your point as quickly as you can, but we'll go rapid fire and see how many we can hit here with full phones. Yay or nay on reclining your seat on an airplane. And remember, at the bottom of the hour in about 10 minutes, Albert Breer on the Redskins cutting Josh Norman and Paul Richardson. Jim's in Bethesda. Jim, go ahead.
Hey, guys. I generally agree it's selfish unless you're on a red eye, but what about people who stand up at sporting events? Is it any different? Aren't they imposing their choice on everyone else behind them, forcing them to stand?
I would say yes, but as someone who does that and would do that during the playoffs, I mean, I would be reasonable in that I'm not going to do it the entire game. I'm not going to do it for nine innings. Two strikes and two outs, I think you knew what you got signed up for. You went to a stadium during an electrifying game with a lot on the line. I think the idea that anyone standing up is above, you know, what you expected, you probably had bad expectations.
It's a great question, though, honestly.
I think it's a fair question.
In terms of comparisons. But I would say, again,
you went
what's
to a
expected.
Game
yeah.
where there's a lot of excitement and an environment that's not normal. In other words, we don't stand up and scream normally. We don't yell profanities normally. You don't drink and walk to an event half inebriated normally. Like, it's a different environment than you would normally be in. Let's go to Ron and Bowie. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Ron.
Hey, how you doing? What happens if somebody's got a medical issue?
What do you mean?
That they have to recline?
Yeah, because I got several herniated discs in my back, and sometimes it's not comfortable just sitting down. Sometimes I even have a hard time standing.
It's far more understandable. And what people want to do a lot of times, by the way, I'm sorry that is your situation, by the way.
Yes,
I agree.
That's
not really much fun. What people want to do is go to the ultimate hardship case to prove their large point.
My buddy who doesn't want electronic strike zones in baseball sends me videos of, like, robots playing baseball every now and then.
Right.
He's like, this is what you want. 2020, this is your national shortstop. No, it's not. It's not what I'm saying at all.
Well, what if this is the case? We're all human beings. We can have a reasonable
exception. That having said, here's my solution to that. I think you tell the person behind you, hey, I hate to tell you this. I've got a back situation, and if you don't mind, I'd love to recline my chair a little bit. And I'll bet you they'll say, no problem, you go ahead and do that. I would never say no to anybody.
Never looks back, and I could see it coming. They do that move where they stiffen up. The left arm gets stiff. I could see the little crease between the seats. And they're starting to shove that seat back without even asking.
Manuel and Chantilly on the fan. What's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to extend the conversation about common courtesy on a flight. So what about people that keep the light on during the whole duration of the flight, even when it's an overnight flight, or other people that like to have their window open when all of the windows are clearly closed and it's an obstruction to everyone's kind of peace and relaxation?
I think it is much easier to move around and kind of tolerate that. You know, in other words, you close your eyes or you can shield yourself from that light. Look, in the same way that I don't want to be inconvenienced by them, if they want to read a book, they should be able to do that. I personally, if I'm sitting in the window, I don't keep the window wide open when people are sleeping next to me if I notice it trying to sleep. I'm not big on having the light on. But if they want to read a book and have their light pointed down at them and you just have to deal with a little bit of the remnants of that, not a big issue with that at all.
It's not a floodlight. It's not a room light. I know it's not ideal, but that's far less than people don't understand this. Personal space is a huge deal, especially when it's being limited by this industry. Again, the real villain's the airline. I can't fix that right now. We're all dealing with the same thing.
Let's go to Dave in Stafford on G&D. What's up, Dave?
Hey, Dave.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. The funny thing is the last row on our airlines, you can't do anything. That's the row. I unfortunately have sat in it many times. You can't move that chair,
right?
The one that's up against the restroom. So check this out. If everybody reclines the whole way back, those guys don't even get a choice. They're just screwed.
And that's the guy that's punching the lady's seat. That's where he was.
Yeah, that's where I think it goes back to the decency thing that a bunch of your callers rightly pointed out. It's all about decency. You got to talk to the person behind you and just extend that piece of citizenship and just ask.
Last word goes to Ryan in Manassas. Ryan, you in or out on putting your seat back on an airplane?
I'm actually out on that because, one, you don't, like everybody said, you don't know if they have a medical issue or anything like that. Just before you get on the plane, when you get on the plane, tell them, hey, look, do you mind if I recline my seat? They may say yes, they may say no.
But, and if they say yes, by the way, you're in business. If they say no, who cares? Then you're a little bit less comfortable on the flight. But guess what? At least you're not being a terrible person.
Well, it's my seat, but my left elbow trickles into the middle seat. I paid for it. Get to do what I want.
I didn't get to put my seat back on my flight, but it's fine.
It's fine.
I think that's what you're telling
me. It's fine.
Albert Breer is next. And by the way, before we get out of here today at 1:45, Eli Rogers, who spent 3 seasons in the NFL with the Pittsburgh Steelers, is now the starting wide receiver with the DC Defenders. He'll be with us on Grant and Danny here on the Fan. Audi Field was sold out. Game 1, DC Defenders last weekend. Game 2 tomorrow, 2 o'clock. You can hear it right here on the Fan. XFL continuing its action. Eli Rogers will be on the show to preview the game. The Defenders receiver who caught 78 passes with the Steelers in the NFL between 2016 and 2018. That's coming up in about 11 minutes. Right now, though, on the Mattress Warehouse hotline, our friend Albert Breer of SI and MMQB. Albert, Josh Norman and Paul Richardson both released by the Redskins. Do you think they're done with their roster purge for now at this point?
I mean, like, they're going to have to do something with Jordan Reed, but that's more medical. And I think you guys understand, like, there are entanglements with that and everything else. And so, I mean, I think something's going to happen with Jordan Reed. It's just sort of going to be a matter of course and how that all goes down. So, you know, that's the other one that's sort of floating around out there. But that's a different category than what we just saw happen with Josh Norman or Paul Richardson. And, you know, with those two guys, I mean, that's pretty simple. It's, you know, both those guys had big numbers, and those guys had performed to those numbers. And so, you know, I think everybody knew those were coming. It was more a matter of when than if.
What's the market going to be for Josh Norman, Albert?
Well, teams are always looking for corners. So, you know, I would sort of, you know, tell you that, like, after you get past, and, you know, if you look at who's going to be available in free agency, you know, guys like Chris Harris, then I think, you know, you'll probably see some team will look at Josh Norman and say, as a reclamation project, maybe he can work. You know, look, there are a lot of teams out there that run that Seattle cover 3, and, you know, I think he would fit into something like that. But at this point of his career, I think it's more, all right, like, is there a team out there that logistically makes sense from a system standpoint? You know, he's not going to be anywhere close to the sort of money that he got last time around. But I'm sure because of the raw need at corner, and because most teams need 3 or 4 good ones, there will be a home somewhere for him.
Albert Breer on Grant and Danny. Now, here in town, we respect Quentin Dunbar's development because he was an undrafted free agent wide receiver, changed positions. And by last year, when he was on the field, he was the best corner here in Washington. I wonder, though, nationally, what is thought of Dunbar? I mean, do other teams know and think highly of him? And what would a market be like for him? Because he's talked about wanting to be traded.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that the Redskins are – I mean, like, look, there's part of the advantage of having Ron Rivera there is I think he can, you know, help talk players off the ledge with those sorts of things. And, you know, Ron's been down that road plenty of times. You may remember when Dave Gettleman got there in 2013 or before the 2013 season, you know, a big part of what they had to do there was they had to purge the roster and they had all kinds of cap issues and they were working through X, Y, and Z. And so – you know, he had to manage a lot of different guys, I guess, sort of the stuff they had on their personal docket. So, yeah, I understand where Quentin Dunbar probably wants to capitalize now on what was a really strong year. Is he, you know, up there in like the Steph Gilmore category? No. But he's a good young corner. And I probably look at him similar to, you know, just to give you guys a name that you're familiar with, like somebody like Kendall Fuller a few years ago, where, you know, across the NFL, he's seen as a player who's shown a lot of promise, but, you know, I don't know that anybody's sure that he's, you know, a top-shelf guy at this point.
NFL reporter Albert Breer from the MMQB joins us here on Grant and Danny. Albert, hear me out on this. If we know anything in Washington, it's false hope, okay? So I've kind of done this dance before, but I'm looking at the situation now. After today's moves, there's a chance they could approach $60-some million in open cap space, around 7th, 8th, 9th, after a few machinations today. I look at some of the young pieces that they've got, Terry McLaurin, Dwayne Haskins, arrow trending up, that young defensive line, et cetera. I could all of a sudden see why Ron Rivera maybe said, not just because I'm getting total autonomy and lots of power, but he might have said, hey, that's not a bad situation there. Is that maybe – am I crazy thinking
I think part of it is sort of, you know, because – and look, this is the way a lot of coaches will see these situations. Because the organization's been such a mess, you know, I think a coach would walk into that sort of situation. This is Kyle Shanahan, by the way, in San Francisco 3 years ago, where ownership to a certain degree is embarrassed by what's happened and is willing to sort of say, okay, it's your show now. That's really attractive to a coach. So, you know, I think, you know, Kyle Shanahan certainly had that in San Francisco 3 years ago, and Ron Rivera has it in Washington now. So that gives you a fair amount of control, and it's going to allow you to kind of put your fingerprints on the team. As for what's on the roster right now, if you like Dwayne Haskins as a quarterback, and I think there's still a lot of room to grow there, then yeah, I mean, you know, if you want to take the San Francisco comparison to another level, you can say young quarterback, and also along the defensive line with all of the guys they've drafted over the last few years. You know, last year, I don't think anybody would have looked at San Francisco's offensive line and said, oh, that's going to be the best team. You had DeForest Buckner, you had Eric Armstead, you know, you had Solomon Thomas, but, you know, in one offseason they trade for Dee Ford, draft Nick Bosa, and all of a sudden that thing's a rocket ship. And, like, look at the Redskins now, all the first-round picks they've got on their defensive line. Montez Sweat, Daron Payne, Jonathan Allen. I know Ryan Kerrigan was like a generation ago, but he was a first-round pick too. I mean, you can certainly look at that and say that's sort of like San Francisco last year, where if you drop Chase Young into that mix, now all of a sudden we're talking about something else altogether. And so there's reasons to look at the roster and say maybe they aren't that far off. And, you know, I think that, of course, you know, Ron Rivera not coming in with the idea that he can sort of, you know, put his fingerprints on the team, I think is a very, very attractive thing.
Albert, Greg Olsen has met with and visited the facilities of the Bills, Redskins, and Seahawks. And what do you think the chances are that he'd want to link back up with Rivera as opposed to going to a much more legitimate contender in those other two teams?
Yeah, my guess is that and this is a guess, I want to make sure I say this, my guess is that he would prioritize being in a position to compete for a championship. So, you know, to me, it's, you know, sort of the familiarity of playing with Ron, you know, the ability to go play in an offense in Washington that he's familiar with. You know, obviously he worked with Scott Turner and had Scott Turner as a play caller at the end of last year in Carolina. So, you know, I think there are some positives. There's familiarity, you know, so you're kind of balancing familiarity and the ability to be sort of a leader of something that's new versus an ability to compete right away. And Seattle and Buffalo obviously give him that. So he'd be balancing those things. And, you know, I wouldn't rule out the idea that TV could be really attractive to him, too. The fact that he's getting this sort of audition doing XFL games, I mean, sometimes guys get in that. They're such naturals, and, you know, it's – and he's very, very good at it to begin with when he's done it, kind of the cameos in the past. You know, I certainly wouldn't rule out the idea that one of the networks says, wow, this guy's awesome. Like, we got to actually give him real money. And maybe there's something there where he says, you know, I got to make a decision now on playing versus not playing. And so I think a bunch of different things are on the table for Greg Olsen. And we'll see what happens.
Albert, thank you as always, buddy. Enjoy the weekend.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
See you, man.
Albert Breer flies around. I wonder if he's a seat recliner. We should have asked him. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Maybe we could pose that question to Eli Rogers, the three-year Pittsburgh Steeler, now in the XFL at 27 years old, trying to get back into the National Football League. In a big game for the Defenders as they got to 1-0. They play at home at Audi Field tomorrow at 2. He joins us next on the Fan. Stretch run of Grant and Danny on this Valentine's Day Friday. We'll see what the weekend has in store on our schedules before we get out of here in a few. But I know tomorrow afternoon what I'll be doing at 2 o'clock. I'm going to be over at Audi Field for Game 2 for the D.C. Defenders. They are 1-0. They're welcoming the New York Guardians to town for a divisional rivalry matchup. And Eli Rogers will be on the field for the Defenders. Had a strong first game. Helped them get into the win column with Cardale Jones making big plays in the passing game. They had 4 plays of over 20-plus through the air. And Eli Rogers, who caught 78 passes with the Steelers over 3 seasons in the NFL, 30 games in the league, joins us now. Eli, thanks so much for hopping on Grant and Danny. Let's just start with that first experience in the XFL. How did you think the level of competition played, and what was your thought on the actual quality of the football?
Oh, man, first off, you know, I'm thankful for the opportunity. But the the level of play was very similar to the NFL. You know, the game speed is pretty fast, being that, you know, it's a hurry-up clock, so you get to the ball fast. The difference, though, is, you know, the coaches in the headphones. I mean, the coaches on the walkie in your ear and the helmet. So,
yeah, because in the NFL, they can only talk to the quarterback, but in the XFL, even all the receivers and running backs can hear the play and what he's saying.
Correct. So, you know, I think that's an advantage. You know, you get to line up fast and kind of look at the defense, sort out what you're going to do. You know, I'm not sure if the defense have the walkies in that ear, but the level of play, you know, it's football. So these guys are who aspire to get to the NFL or have been in the league and trying to get back into it.
How tough is it? Because I imagine playing in college and playing in the NFL, you guys are poring over scouting reports and going over film and tape and tendencies and figuring everything out. Well, that doesn't exist because this is so new, right? How do you figure out what you think is going to work or not work versus a given team in a week that there's not much tape on?
Yeah, it's not much tape on it. Thankfully, we have this week one film of everyone across the league. But prior to the beginning of the season, we had scrimmages and a spring game. So all 8 teams in the league kind of scrimmaged other teams and put some film out there. Obviously, they didn't show a lot, but it was something to kind of get the feel of, you know, the players. So that was a plus. But yes, it is hard, difficult to come up with a game plan for the team.
Eli Rogers, 27 years old, went to Louisville. In fact, Redskins fans will remember
back in
2016. I remember in week one, that was game one of the season against the Steelers at FedEx. It was a lot of expectations. The Steelers came to town. We thought the Redskins were going to be really good coming off the playoffs. And that was not the case.
That wasn't the case.
But you torched them that night. I thought you caught 6 balls and a touchdown. You were running all over the place. Now he's back in D.C., this time benefiting the locals. How about Audi Field? There were 18,000 people. Seemed like a pretty good atmosphere. What were you anticipating, and what did you think of the actual turnout last weekend?
Well, man, honestly, I wasn't expecting 18,000 to be there. So, you know, once I got out there on the field and I saw that during the pregame warm-up, it was pretty packed. I was like, you know, shocked and happy. It brought excitement to me. And I was just excited to be out there in front of the fans. They were so amazing. Such great energy. They had a few chants going on. I have to learn them. But, you know, it was exciting out there.
Eli, what was the recruiting process like for you? Because I think that's an underrated part of this thing, right? You mentioned guys are trying to get back in to the NFL, whether they're going to workouts or doing this, that, and the other. What was it like? Mm-hmm. Did someone call and say, hey, we want you to join this league? And you're going, what's the league called? Wait, what is it? Go through that process a little bit. What was that like?
Well, the DC Defenders got in contact with me around like late September, around September, I believe. And, you know, they were just saying, you know, we're interested in you. You know, if you don't have if no other team pick you up during this NFL season, you know, we would love for you to come out here and play for us in the XFL. And, you know, I kind of heard of the XFL before, but this was years ago. And, you know, he kind of explained that there'll be a few rule changes. Gerald Dixon is the one that got in contact with me. So shout out to Gerald, my brother. And, you know, he just said that, you know, there was love for me to come out here and play.
Well, you're one of the most accomplished receivers in the league in terms of NFL experience with over 800 yards and four touchdowns. And you and the Defenders are off to a great start. We will see it Audi Field tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
Eli, it's going to be fun. 2:00 against the Guardians. Ball out, and good luck to you.
Good luck, buddy.
Y'all going to be there?
I will be there.
Oh, yeah, then. We live. All right.
Yeah. Appreciate you. We are live.
That's
true.
That's great.
That's my guy, Eli Rogers. Now, he asked if we're going to be there. You notice I said I would be there.
You answered. I like that. If the answer's in the positive, well, then, we are live.
Yeah, but what if we just said no? What if I just said I don't think we're gonna make it? We got things to do.
No, it's not for me.
What's the opposite of we're live?
We are on tape delay.
We are
being DVR'd.
We are on absolutely. We are on cable news network.
That was fun.
That was good.
I don't know why that popped the room big time. By the way, everybody was chuckling.
Everyone loved it. Tommy Dar, I got a kick out of that. Defenders Guardians 2:00 tomorrow at Audi Field. Also on the docket this weekend. Ovi's got another try to get to 700. He's at 698. He is two away. Tomorrow night, 10 p.m. in Phoenix. What would be interesting about doing it against the Coyotes out there, that is where he scored the goal from his back.
It wasn't his first goal, right? It was the goal that people are going to play. When the Hall of Fame speech happens and they go, let's take a look at Alex Ovechkin's career, and that's the first goal that's going to come up.
Number one of his career and maybe number 698 and 700, big picture. But, yeah, it wasn't his first ever.
Yeah,
it was just his most impressive, I would say.
Yeah, it was amazing. Still thinking about that.
The Wizards, 1 week from now, back in action. They've got a lengthy break because of the All-Star festivities. How much will you watch this weekend?
Of the All-Star festivities?
Yeah.
I'll check it out, actually, because my oldest and my wife will be out of town, so I'll be able to watch kind of unfettered. I'll tune in. Mostly three-point contest. I want to see what the dunk contest, what the wrinkles are. I'll look at some of the Rising Star stuff. It's kind of a way to get back in touch with the next class in the NBA.
Looking forward to Monday's show. We'll obviously have some analysis on the atmosphere and the outcome of the Defenders' second game, but also more fallout for the Redskins. I don't think they are done making roster moves.
Calling your shot this afternoon?
Yeah, I don't know if it'll be today or over the weekend, but I'm guessing there's going to be at least one more veteran on his way out. So far, Josh Norman released and Paul Richardson released by Washington. Both of those items coming down today. Big thanks, as always, to Dar and Thommy. If you missed any of the show, you can go to thefandc.com or grantanddanny.com/audio. Make sure you've got the radio.com app, and you can use that 24-hour function.
Have a good call tomorrow, my friend. And now, our guest.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.